Welcome to www.meeknessandtruth.org, a teaching and ministry website of Dr. David Geisler. Now join him for Conversational Pre-Evangelism, Part 5.
I will awake in the dawn.
Good morning.
Now let me do a little review. We've been talking about the conversational pre-evangelism model. I said that there are four types of conversations we have: hearing, illuminating, uncovering, and building. And that corresponds to four roles: the musician, the artist, the archaeologist, and the builder. Now, last week we looked at the archaeologist, right? These are the 7 points, and I'm not going to go through these. But let me encourage you to look for those opportunities to begin to uncover barriers in your conversations with non-believers. Now, today we want to talk about the last part of this model called building conversations. Now, what do we mean by building? Well, what we want to do is we want to build a bridge to the gospel. See, we've been talking mostly about the area of pre-evangelism. This is the area now that we move from pre-evangelism to evangelism so that we can share the gospel. I fully believe this, that if all we do is pre-evangelism and we never get around to sharing the gospel, then something is wrong. If all I do is pre-evangelism and I never share the gospel, then something is wrong with my evangelism. So let me encourage you to think that pre-evangelism is just a first step, and that what we really want to do is get an opportunity to share the gospel with our non-believing friends. What is our goal here? Our goal is to find common ground and build a bridge to the gospel. Now, how do we do this? I'd like to suggest that there are 5 steps we can keep in mind, all right? 5 steps that we want to focus on this morning. First, we want to find the right balance in our approach. Do you know what I mean by this? In other words, we have to find the right balance between giving people what I call objective evidence for the faith or talking about our subjective experience of how Christ has made a difference in our life. You see, you have to decide when you're talking to people, what is it that they need to hear at this moment? Do I need to give them some kind of objective evidence, maybe for the resurrection of Jesus Christ? Or maybe they need to see Christ in my life first before they can even hear what makes Jesus different from other religious leaders. And so we need to find that balance. Paul says in Philippians 1:14, because of my chains, most of the brethren in the Lord have been encouraged to speak the word of God more courageously and fearlessly. In other words, by the way Paul lived his life, it had an impact. And by the way you and I live our life, it can have an impact. But what I want you to understand this morning is this, is that you and I, in the world we live in today, must share more than our experience of Christ. Now, why is that true? Somebody tell me. Why is it in a postmodern world we cannot just share with people our experience of Christ and how Christ has made a difference in our life? Anyone? Everyone has an experience. You've heard this little phrase, it may be true for you, but not for me. Have you heard that? Especially true of young people. They'll say, you know, it's great that you have experienced Christ in that way. I don't have that kind of experience. It may be true for you, but it's not true for me. Think of it this way. You've got a guy, look at this graphic here. You've got a guy holding the Bible, and he says, I've experienced Christ in my heart. That's how I know it's true. And then you've got another guy holding a book, the Book of Mormon, and he says, I've received a burning in my bosom. That's how I know it's true. Now, how are we supposed to differentiate between what we believe and what a Mormon believes? How do we determine what is true if all we do is just share our, quote, experience? You see the problem? So this is the first thing that we want to do when we're building a bridge. We want to consider what kind of evidence? Evidence of my life? Objective evidence for the Christian faith? What makes Jesus different? Or what combination of those things are helpful? Secondly, we want to find common ground with those that we're attempting to reach. What do I mean by finding common ground? Well, look at this graphic here. We want to find that point of intersection between our belief and our non-Christian friend's belief. Paul said in 1 Corinthians 9:22, to the weak, I became weak to win the weak. And then he says this, I have become all things to all men so that by all means I might save some. You see, a lot of times as Christians, we don't work hard enough to find that common ground. And as a result, we may not get as far with our non-believing friends. Let me illustrate what I mean by this. One day on a college campus, I was speaking to this Jewish agnostic. He was really angry at the Christians he just talked to because they tried to use the Bible to prove that Christianity was true, and he didn't even think that the Bible was reliable, and he wasn't even certain if God existed. So with this particular student, I backed up to find common ground. And I talked to him about the issue of absolute truth. And I helped him to see that he could not deny absolute truth exists. And you know what this student said to me? He said, the last thing he said to me is this, you're going to have me up all night trying to figure this out. Now notice how his reaction was different to me than the previous Christians he talked to. Why is that? Because I tried to find a common ground. In other words, I tried to find a point of intersection in terms of what he believed and what I believed, and that I could build on that. So it's very important when we're talking to people that don't necessarily agree with us that we work at finding common ground. Now, how do we do this? Well, first of all, we want to build conversations with others based on common interest or hobbies. In other words, before we find common ground in terms of religious beliefs, sometimes we've got to take that pre-step and find common ground in terms of what their interest or their hobbies is. I always try to relate the gospel to somebody's interest rather than expect them to understand my gospel according to my interest. Does that make sense? You know, we have children, we have hobbies that are similar to our neighbors. Why don't we start there? Why don't we build conversations with our neighbors? Why don't we build conversations with people at work and find out what their interest is, what they enjoy doing, and then trying to find a way to build a bridge to the gospel from their interest? We want to look for opportunities to talk about topics, for example, that have a moral or ethical theme. I find it easier to move in a religious direction if I can find someone who says, well, I think this is right or wrong. If they could say that, if they're willing to say that, I can help build a bridge a lot easier. So we want to find common ground. So once we find common ground in terms of interest or hobbies or something of a moral or ethical nature in politics or something we read in the paper, then it's easier then to build these spiritual common ground. And this is some examples of questions that I've used with college students that help kind of move the conversation in a spiritual direction. See, what we want to do is search for common ground with low-key spiritual questions. In other words, if you come up to a stranger and just try to share the gospel right away, they might. I'm not saying they will. They might just shut you down right away. But if you try to build their spiritual interest by asking them questions like, do you think it really matters what we believe? Do you think everyone can be right? Is the important thing that you and I have some kind of faith? It doesn't really matter what the object of our faith is. It's just the fact that we have faith. Is that the important thing in your mind? Do you see any difference between Jesus and other religious leaders? You see, this is something that these kinds of questions you can use with your neighbors, your coworkers, that kind of get them to think through their beliefs. You see, this is exactly the kind of thing that the Apostle Paul did. He tried to find common ground. You notice in these two different passages, Paul's approach was different. In Acts 17, when Paul was speaking to the polytheist, he used one kind of approach. In Acts 28, he used another. Because in Acts 28, he was dealing with the Jews and the God-fearing Greeks. And he was just trying to show that Jesus was the fulfillment of all these Old Testament prophecies. So it's very important that when you and I are building bridges with people, that we look for finding ways of building common ground with them. I do this every week with my neighbors when I ask them questions about their lawn. That's my common ground with my neighbors in my cul-de-sac. I want to know why their grass is growing better than mine. And so I ask them questions. What are you using? Or I find anything that will connect me to have a conversation with my neighbor. Your coworker, the same thing. Find an opportunity to show that you care about what's going on in their life. Asking them about their children is a great common ground, right? Asking them about their programs in school and what they're learning and how do you feel like their education is going. All these kinds of questions as a parent are great common ground. See, I think we skip a step sometimes. We just jump into the spiritual, and we forget sometimes we need to kind of find a connection in terms of their interest to be able to have a conversation with them so that we can begin to share Christ with them. Third, then we want to build a bridge. Now listen to this. Listen carefully. Build a bridge from a point of shared beliefs, even those they're not aware of. In other words, we have a lot more in common with non-believers than they even realize. Do you realize that? Let me illustrate this. I mentioned before that there was a student that I talked to after 9/11 who said to me, I used to think it didn't matter what I believe, but now after 9/11, I now know it matters what I believe. Now, think about this. If you can get someone to admit that it matters what they believe, then it's just a small step to get that person to admit, then not everyone can be right. Agreed? And then it's another small step to get them to admit that somebody has to be wrong. So then the next question you can ask them is something like this. How do you personally decide who is right and who's wrong? But it all kind of follows from that one step. That it matters what you believe. And I find that as soon as I can get someone to admit that it matters what they believe, it's a lot easier to build that bridge. Have you found that out? So in other words, there are things that you and I can keep in mind as we're talking to non-believers. Let me illustrate this a little more practically for you. Especially here in the Charlotte area where everybody is religious practically. You see, if I can get someone to admit that they are a sinner, then it's not very hard for me to get them to admit then that they're accountable. Well, let's think about this for a second. What kind of question could we ask someone to get them to admit, first of all, that they're a sinner? One of the things that I like to say to non-believers is this. It's not that I don't meet up to God's standards. Do you realize sometimes I don't even meet up to my own standards as a husband, as a father of what I should be? And I tell non-believers that because I want them to know that there is such a thing as sin. And if I have to do that through my life, I'm okay with that. Do you get what I'm trying to say here? We need to talk to people in a way that we get them to accept these planks. Or how about the next one? I'm accountable. Once I get someone to admit, yeah, I'm a sinner, I don't measure up to even my standards, not even talking about God's standard. What do I do to help them realize they're accountable? The question I always like to use is this: do you think Hitler will be in heaven? If Hitler won't be in the heaven, then what have they just told you? They told you that there's standard that Hitler doesn't measure up to and other people have. Do you think Hitler should be in heaven or should be in hell? Which one? Okay, should there be, maybe in people's mind they don't think Hitler should be in hell, but maybe you can ask a question like this: do you think people like Hitler should be judged after his life was over? Or should he get away with killing 6 million Jews? And they may not like the idea that there's a hell, but they realize that they don't want people like Saddam Hussein and Hitler to get away with all the things that they've done. I'm just saying that as we're talking to people, we need to keep these things in mind. I'm a sinner. I'm accountable. I cannot measure up. I cannot measure up. How do we illustrate to people that we cannot measure up to God's standard? What would you say to people? That no matter how much good you do, it's not going to be good enough. How do you illustrate that? One day a student was saying to me, why can't God just let me into heaven? And I noticed he was drinking a cup of water. And I said, well, could I put a little sewage in your water? And he said, no. I said, but it's only a tiny little bit of sewage. He said, that still wouldn't be okay. I said, so you see how something small can have a big impact. He said, yes. I said, you know, that's kind of how we look at our sins. We see them as small, but unfortunately to God, they have a big impact. So using illustrations to help people to understand that no matter how much good I do, my life is still tainted. It still doesn't measure up. And I think the more our culture moves in a certain direction, the harder it's going to be for us as Christians to make that point with our non-believing friends. I think it's harder for us to even admit that we're sinners as Christians, that we don't measure, that we fail. Because we live in a world that everything is so gray. Everything is not black and white. There is no such thing as sin anymore. And I think it impacts us as Christians that we start to believe it. And we feel uncomfortable talking to non-believers about the issue of sin in their life or even our life. And this makes it difficult for us, does it not, for us to share the gospel with people? Once we build bridges from a point of shared beliefs, even those are not aware of, then in the back of our minds, we can build bridges that are what I call head bridges or heart bridges. What are heart bridges, for example? Heart bridges are like heart longings. Let me give you an example of a heart bridge. One day I was talking to a college staff person in Malaysia. And in talking to him, I found out he had a Hindu background. And so I was curious what made him move towards Christianity. And what he told me is this, is that as a child, he realized that when Jesus died on the cross, he said, Father, forgive them, for they know not what they do. And he realized as a Hindu that for Jesus to say something like that, there had to be something supernatural about him. He didn't know anything about the Bible, really. He just knew that Jesus said, forgive them, for they know not what they do. See, in a world that equates fundamental beliefs with arrogance, right, and hostility, we need to help people to understand that Jesus taught we are to love our enemies and pray for those who persecute us. Carmel is a good example of building heart bridges. They have joy prom. They have all these things that they do to show people that we love them. We care for them. That's a heart bridge. Helping people to see what makes Jesus different. Then once we build heart bridges, then we can build head bridges. Now let me give you a few examples of head bridges. Things like comparing Jesus with Muhammad and Buddha. You can point out to your friends, Do you know that Jesus was without sin? In fact, even the Quran states that Jesus is without sin. And yet, Muhammad was told in the Quran to ask for forgiveness. Buddha was imperfect. How do we know Buddha was imperfect? Well, he had many reincarnations, right? Doesn't that indicate some kind of imperfect life? If he was perfect, he wouldn't be reincarnated, according to Buddhist beliefs. So he was understood as having many rebirths. So at best, he pointed to the way and he followed a path of purity, but he didn't possess it. Okay, here's some examples of, like, if you were to compare Jesus and Muhammad. Jesus, according to the Quran, was virgin born. Muhammad wasn't. Jesus, according to the Quran, was sinless. Muhammad wasn't. Jesus did many miracles, like raising the dead, according to Surah 5, 110. Muhammad did no miracles except translating the Quran. Jesus taught, blessed are the peacemakers. Jesus bodily descended into heaven. So just a comparison. This is what I call objective evidence. This is something that you can use to help people to see, especially if you're talking to a Muslim, how Jesus even stands out in the Quran. Now, if you take all these planks and put them together, you can build a bridge with people. I'd like to suggest some ways to do this. There are six reasons why it matters what you believe. And these six reasons are planks that you and I can use in building a bridge to the gospel with people. First, what you believe will affect how you live. We learned that after 9/11, didn't we? Secondly, not all religious viewpoints can be right, right? Third, faith must have an object to have merit. See, the important thing is not that we have faith, right? According to 1 Corinthians 15, it's that we have an object to our faith. Fourth, not all religious leaders made equal claims. Do you know Jesus Christ is the only major religious leader who ever claimed to be God? But fifthly, the proof of Christ's claims have no parallel among major religious leaders. You see, there's a tendency for people to say, people of other faiths, or people that are skeptics or atheists, to say basically that all religions are the same, and that no one religion is better than another. And what our job as Christians is to help them understand that no, there is a difference. Jesus is very unique. Because there's a tendency for people to try to lower the playing field and try to say that comparing Christianity and other religions is like comparing apples with apples. That's what people do. Let me illustrate this. One day I was talking to a guy on a plane, and in talking to him, I discovered he had a church background, but in talking to him, it became clear that no one had ever given him any evidence for the Christian faith, so he didn't really believe it. And so I asked him, has anyone ever shared with you anything about Jesus Christ? And I started giving him some of the evidence for the Christian faith. And right in the middle of me giving him some of this evidence, you know what he did? He almost shouted to me, well, he said, well, what about Buddha? Or what about Muhammad? Now, why did he try to interject about Buddha and Muhammad as I was giving him evidence for Jesus? He was getting uncomfortable, wasn't he? And what he was trying to do is lower the playing field so that Christianity was no better than any other religion. And I find a lot of times that people will do this. They will try to say, it's okay for you to be a Christian, but don't try to say there's something different about Jesus. And that's what we need to help them understand. There is something unique about Jesus. Now, look at this little phrase here. I want you to write this down on your outline. This is what I call the apologetic part of my six-week training with you. This is what I want you to go away remembering. I want you to write this down. Buddha claimed to point to the way. Muhammad claimed to be a prophet of God. But Jesus Christ is the only major religious leader who ever claimed to be God. And then he proved it by doing three things. He fulfilled prophecy that was written hundreds of years before he ever existed. He died on the cross and he rose from the dead. I cannot tell you how many times I will use a little phrase like this when I am trying to build head bridges with people. When I'm trying to help them see there's something unique about Jesus subjectively. It's just not my experience of Jesus that makes a difference. I'm trying to say from history, we know he did these three things. And no other great religious leader did these things. And that's what makes Jesus stand apart. And so I'm sharing my subjective experience of Christ and how he's made a difference in my life. But I'm also sharing some objective evidence for my faith. Because in the world we live in today, if all we do is share our experience, we're going to run into problems with some people. So, can I encourage you to memorize this little phrase and to look for an opportunity in your conversation with non-believers to talk about what's so unique about Jesus Christ? Now, the last point is this. Without God, some people find it difficult to find meaning in life. Dostoevsky said this, if God is dead, anything is permissible. And here's the problem. The death of God has led to the death of man. Because under Hitler, 12 million people were murdered. Under Stalin, 18 million people murdered. Now, I want you to notice something. Look at these 6 points. Each of these points are either head bridges or heart bridges. Point one. What you believe will affect how you live. Is that a head bridge or a heart bridge? It's a heart bridge, right? Do you see that? How about number two? Not all religious viewpoints can be right. Head or heart? Head, right? Three, faith must have an object. Head or heart? Head. Fourth, not all religious leaders made equal claims. Head or heart? Head. Fifth, the proof of Christ's claims have no parallel among major religious leaders. Head. Six, without God, some people find it difficult to find meaning in life. Head or heart? Heart. So what I'm trying to say is that as you build bridges to the gospel with non-believers, you should look for building bridges using planks that are head bridges and heart bridges. And you have to decide what kind of planks you want to use in building your bridge to the gospel. So we want to find the right balance, find common ground, build a bridge. And the fourth point is remember the goal. Do you realize how important it is when you are doing pre-evangelism to remember the goal? I cannot tell you how many times I've watched believers arguing with non-believers and they were winning the battle, but they were losing the war. Why? Why were they losing the war? I believe because they forgot the goal. See, the goal is not to prove that we're right and they're wrong. The goal is this, to remove the obstacle so that we can help them take one step closer to Jesus Christ every day. When I'm having a discussion with a non-believer, I don't always feel like I have to prove every single point. And if they think that I'm wrong about a certain point, I'm okay with that. I'm concerned more about, are they willing to have future conversations, and can I push the ball down the road just a little further so that there'll be other people that God can put in their life and help them to go further, even after my conversation with them is over. You see, and I think this is the problem with Christian apologetics. I'll be honest with you. I think a lot of times we've learned Christian apologetics and then we hit people over the head with our truth. But remember what the Apostle Paul said in 1 Corinthians 13? Though I have all knowledge, if I give my body to be burned, but I have not what? Love. I am nothing. And if I'm not loving, if I'm not considering his or her eternal destiny, if that's not the focal point, then I'm missing it. And I'm going to get into arguments with people. I used to. I'll be honest with you, I don't argue with people about a Christian truth anymore. On a personal level, I don't debate with people because I feel like that's a waste of their time and it's certainly a waste of my time. I just want to find if I can have a spiritual dialogue with someone that they're open to continuing the conversation. And I think in the world we live in today, I don't think that's a bad approach in talking to people. Last point, actively seek for an opportunity to transition to the gospel. In other words, we've been talking these basically 5 weeks about pre-evangelism. But there comes a point where we got to move from pre-evangelism to evangelism. This is the point. When we're building our bridge, we get to the point where we need to share the gospel with them. And I think this track that Carmel uses, the story, is an excellent track. It's an excellent way to share the gospel with people. I encourage you to keep some of these in your purses, in your pockets, wherever you go, because you never know when you're going to need one of these. You and I need to be ready, in season and out of season, to look for an opportunity to share the gospel with people. So here's a little phrase that Bill Hybels, in his book Contagious Christian Training, uses to move from pre-evangelism to evangelism, and I find it very helpful. Has anyone ever explained to you the difference between Christianity and other religions? I can explain the difference to you in two words, do versus done. And then he goes on to explain it this way. All the religions in the world basically say you have to do something. For example, and then some more specifics here. Muslims teach that man's good works must outweigh his bad works. Hindus teach that if one does enough good, he can pay off his karmic debt and he can escape the cycle of reincarnation. Buddhists teach that when we desire to stop desiring, that's something we can do. But Christianity says, no, there's nothing you can do. It's already been D-O-N-E done. Technically, all you have to do passively, not actively, passively, is receive the gift that God has provided and invite Christ to come into your life. Ask him to change you from the inside out. So I use this little phrase sometimes when I'm witnessing to people. And I'll say something like this. Has anyone ever explained to you the difference between Christianity and all the other religions in the world? I can explain the difference using two words, do versus done. And then you explain the do part and then the done part. And if we had time today, I would have you practice this with one another. Practice this little phrase, do versus done. So these are the 5 points. Find the right balance, find common ground, build a bridge from a point of shared beliefs, remember the goal, and actively seek for an opportunity to transition to the gospel. And the last thing is invite them to take a step of faith. Listen to what one of my former students in Singapore said about taking a step of faith. She said, accepting Jesus is like drinking a cup of tea. You will never know how it really tastes by hearing what others say, unless you drink it for yourself. Taste and see that the Lord is good, inviting people to take a step. Now, let me ask you this question real quickly. What if they say, I don't care? What if they say, I don't care whether Christianity is true, I don't care whether Buddhism is true, I don't care whether Hinduism is true, I just don't care. What would be your response to your friend who just says to you, I don't care? How do you make them care? How do we help people to care? Seems to me this is a problem with young people today. They just don't care. They don't care. They just want to make money and want to be successful. How do we get them to think about caring about the next life? Remember the quote by Jim Elliot? He is no fool to give up what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. Can I encourage you this week to look for an opportunity to take everything that we've taught and start building bridges to sharing the gospel with people? Look for an opportunity this week. Maybe help them understand what's so unique about Jesus. Or maybe help them understand the difference between belief that and belief in. Because maybe they've gone to church all their life, but you've never had a conversation with your friend to find out, do they just believe that Jesus is the Messiah, or do they really believe in him? Let's close in a word of prayer. Father, thank you so much for your Son, Jesus Christ, who died for us in our place and imputed us with your righteousness so that, Lord, we can have a relationship with you. Father, I pray that our lives would be the most important apologetic, that people would see our life and how we live our lives and what we say about you and see that there's a consistency. Father, help us to be a better husband, a better father, a better mother, a better wife, so that we can be all that you have called us to be. Help us to look for those opportunities this week, Lord. In Jesus' name, amen.
Bring your glory, bring your voice.
The copyrights for this recording and its content are held by Dr. David Geisler.